Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we'll have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the most recent five are archived on the website at recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the most recent five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about self-respect, and not really in the sense of how to gain more in really, but in how it impacts our dealings with other people, how it impacts the group dynamic, how our self-respect impacts how we deal with people, and how other people's self-respect impacts how they deal with us. What an idea, because it does make a difference to the group, to the dynamic, because we are the impartial third party, the host usually, and therefore we are the leader. Yeah. And I think what our first question is going to be is, like sometimes we do, we're going to decide what is self-respect. It's a very basic question, but let's think about that for a minute. What are we talking about? What is self-respect? Oh, and I see we have lots of participation. Thank you very much for coming. I always enjoy hearing from all of you. And let's get started. You know, this is Jason and others, and this is quite a few people are saying this, that self-respect is confidence in yourself and in your abilities. Self-respect is really confidence in yourself and in your abilities. I think that's, I'm getting a lot of agreement. Thank you for all of your participation. And I think that's fair to say, don't you, that if you have self-respect, you have confidence in yourself. You think you can handle it. Confidence in yourself and in your abilities. Good point. You know, this is an interesting point that I really hadn't really would have phrased it this way. But it's certainly valid. And, you know, I always say I learn things when we do these shows, and I hope you do too. Monica and others, actually quite a few people, are saying that self-respect is wanting to have yourself as a friend. Wanting yourself as a friend. That would increase your self-respect, wouldn't it? That you're somebody that you would want to have as a friend. What a good thing. Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. That wanting to have yourself as a friend. Thank you, Monica and everybody else. That would be a sign that you have good self-respect. That you'd like to be friends with yourself. Yes, why not? And, you know, Yao is making a good point, too. And that self-respect is caring for yourself as well as you care for other people. Caring for yourself as well as you care for other people. What a good way of putting it. Yeah. Self-respect is caring for yourself. Yeah. And confidence and wanting to have yourself as a friend. If you weren't you, you'd want to be friends. Yes. Hey, what wonderful definitions. Thank you. And we're getting a lot of agreement. You know, Ray and others are also saying, and this is a very good point too, that you have good self-respect when you know that you've done your best in any situation. Knowing that you've done your best in any situation. I gave it my all. I tried my hardest. I respect that in myself, that I always do that. When faced with any kind of a situation, I do my best and I try my hardest, and I have confidence that my best is good, right? Yeah. And that I care for myself as well as I care for other people. Mm-hmm. And that I would want me as a friend. Thank you. Thank you for all of your input. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a question that's kind of being asked, and thank you for all of your participation. And you know that these shows are unscripted. They are kind of organic. We form the show as questions come in. And I'm going to kind of rephrase it. Quite a few people are asking this basic question. Now, we've defined what is self-respect, right? We just talked about that. And quite a few people are asking, how do you show self-respect? How is it evident? How do you project it? How do you show self-respect? Mm-hmm. How do you make it known? Now, this is an interesting answer, and thank you for all of your participation. Andy and others are saying that you show that you have self-respect in the manner in which you carry yourself. The manner in which you carry yourself. Your image that you project. The manner in which you carry yourself. You carry yourself, well, proudly, right? Yeah. And you know, this is a kind of a literal way of looking at it, but people are saying your posture, how you kind of present yourself, how you hold yourself, how you walk and sit, your posture. Hmm? Whether you kind of hide or you sit up straight and like that. Your posture is how you carry yourself. Okay. Lisa says that that's really the way you present. Mm-hmm. And that would have to do with dress and grooming also. Hmm. How do you show self-respect in the manner in which you carry yourself and also the way in which you present yourself? And other people, too, Lisa gives two examples of dress and grooming. Well, I suppose that that is a good sign of self-respect. If you are well-groomed. Mm-hmm. You know, this is an interesting point that's being made by quite a few people. And the point is that thank you all for all of your participation. The point is being made, David and others are saying, that dress and grooming depends on the social and cultural group that you're in because it may mean different things to different people. Mm-hmm. People are saying there's an age difference with dress and grooming as a sign of self-respect, and that younger people dress more casually. Mm-hmm. And maybe, well, I'm not going to say less well-groomed, but less tailored, because grooming, yeah, people are saying that grooming is hygiene, and that's people with good self-respect have good hygiene, I would say. But the dress and grooming may be different to different people depending on your age and depending on your profession too, because people in technology dress more casually, according to Henry. You know, these are good points, that dress and grooming, but it should be, if you have good respect, you dress and groom and present yourself in a way that is confident within your group. How about that? How about we put it that way? Yeah. Because dress and grooming doesn't mean the same to all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, Janet says and others are saying that not only are you confident in yourself and in your presentation, it shows, but you have confidence in your opinions and you're capable of well-reasoned argument. You need to have confidence in your opinions, too. Confidence that you've got it right. I mean, not stubbornness. And we've talked about preconceived notions and about stereotyping and other things like that on this show. And, of course, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com, and all the shows are archived, including the last five, on blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. And we've talked about preconceived notions and about, stereotypes and stubbornness and dealing with obnoxious participants and like that. And so it's not being incapable of flexibility in your opinion. It's just confidence that your opinion has validity, although it may modify when you hear other people's opinions, other people who have good self-confidence, right? But Janet and others are saying that you show self-respect by showing that you have confidence in your opinions and are capable of well-reasoned argument. Interesting. Okay. You know, this is a very good point that's being made by quite a few people, Alexi and others. And, you know, this is kind of a real seminal, a real foundational point that Alexi and others are saying that you show self-respect by being respectful of others. You show self-respect by being respectful of others. You treat people like you want to be treated, and because you have self-respect and you expect to be treated respectfully, you treat others that way too, right? That's a very good point. You know, here's the follow-up to that. Greg and others are saying that you show self-respect when you don't let other people disrespect you. You know the difference. And you say, no, you will not be rude to me. You will not disrespect me. I am showing you respect. Because I have self-respect, I expect you to do the same to me. You show self-respect by not letting other people disrespect you. Interesting point. Wow. That's a real good one. Thank you. Thank you, Greg, and everyone. I'm getting a lot of agreement on that. Yeah. You have self-respect, so you don't let yourself be, victimized, shall we call it. Yeah. And also, you know, it's very important. We are the leader of the group, right? We are the impartial third party. We are the host. We are someone that the other group participants look to for leadership. And to be a leader, you need to have self-respect so that you can have confidence and you can show it so that everybody knows, right? And here comes our next question, because the question is, now that we've talked about not being disrespected and about being, you have self-respect and when you treat other people respectfully, right? And the next question that's coming up, and it's a very good one. You know, on this show, we try to be practical, right? We don't just talk in theory. We try to be practical on what we're saying. And the next question that's coming up quite a bit, and thank you for all of your participation, is that how do you show respect for others, and how do they show respect for you, right? Because we've just said that if you have good self-respect, you won't let someone else disrespect you. Well, how is that shown? How do you show respect for others, and how do they show respect for you? How does this come about that we can understand it, and what should we do, right? Now, here's a funny phrase that's being used. Thank you for all of your participation. Nadia and others are saying that you show respect for others by following the rules of engagement, which is, I think, like an American idiom. And this is, of course, a global show. But the rules of engagement are the rules that have been set down for how we're going to act, right? And we've talked about this before, but a lot of times you need to have an actual set rules of behavior. so that everybody, excuse me, understands that they are being treated fairly and equally, right? Because you want to have set rules of engagement, as Nadia calls it, but really set rules of behavior. Well, how are we going to handle this process so that everyone gets, well, everyone is treated equally and everyone feels when they are done that we have reached a successful outcome and that they've had their opinion heard, that they have been treated fairly, that it was a reasoned outcome, that everybody had participation, right? And that's what the rules of engagement are. They show, they put down how we're going to act during this process. Now, people are asking if you always need to write them down. And the answer is, well, yeah. People are going, you're going to say, it depends, aren't you? Yes. And the answer is, but it does. It depends. If it's a very large group that you're dealing with, well, you might need some written rules, right? Because there's a lot of opinions in the room, a lot of talking, a lot of discussion to get through. If the issues are particularly complex or particularly in, well, I hate to use the word disagreement, but they're being particularly vehemently argued. You might need some written rules of engagement, written rules of how to act, you see? And so, yeah, so you make a decision as to whether or not they're written down. Some people are saying that they pass out. I've got quite a few people are saying this. Isn't that interesting? Thank you for all of your participation. Nadia and others are saying that no matter what kind of a group, they've got a sheet, an actual physical sheet or an email, I suppose, that they pass out before the process starts, giving the rules, giving the basic rules of how we're going to act with each other. No matter what the group is, even if they know them. Yeah. Well, you know, it's not a bad idea. I don't always, depends on the group, and depends on if I really think they're going to be able to act in a civil manner without having the rules written down. But anyway, that's how you show respect for others, by following the rules, right? Nadia and others. Fantastic. Kyle and others are saying that the main rule that you need to follow in order to show respect for others is in the taking turns when speaking rule. The taking turns when speaking. We've talked about actually giving everyone a certain amount of time to speak, especially initially. When we're not in the discussion stage, we're kind of in the presentation of opinion stage, right? And you give a set time limit, and the time is actually kept by someone or something. Personally, and you've heard me say this, those of you who have come back, thank you very much for returning. Thank you for all of your participation. That I like to have a mechanical object in the room that's keeping the time and not a person who you can get mad at or think that they somehow cheated you. I personally use a cooking timer. Yeah, like I think like an egg timer, a little white gadget, kitchen gadget that you turn the knob and it ticks off the time. Everybody can see it and everybody knows they've gotten the same amount. So taking turns when speaking is a way to show respect for others. Good point. It's showing respect for you. Samantha and others are taking that a step further, not only taking turns when speaking, but not interrupting whoever has the floor. No interruptions. You don't want to be interrupted, right? You've got something to say. You don't want to be sidetracked on it. Well, other people don't either. Not fair. You're taking up their time. I'm never interrupting. Good point. Yes, Steve and others are saying that it's important that everybody gets an opportunity to give their opinion. Yeah, everybody gets an opportunity to give their opinion. That's showing respect, right? Showing how you show respect for others Well, you give them an opportunity to give their opinion without interruptions, and everybody gets the same amount of time. Mm-hmm. And people are saying, this is an interesting point. Sometimes the people in the group are not equal in ability or knowledge. Okay, somebody in the group has more to say than someone else in the group. Say everybody gets 2 minutes, but somebody gets 2 minutes and they don't have too much to say, so 2 minutes is plenty of time. But somebody else who has maybe an expertise, who has done some research, who for some reason needs more, real legitimately. See, we've talked about everybody gets the same amount of time, but this is a very good point that Ellen and Steve and others are making, that it is sometimes you need to have uneven timing. The way that, and thank you, I'm getting a lot of participation, and yes, this is absolutely true. Pardon me. The way that I usually handle that is at the outset, we all get the same amount of time to kind of state a position. Then we know how people are starting out, which opinion they have, what they think right away. And it kind of clears the air, and it's a good thing. But then some people need another turn. And quite frankly, everybody knows they need another turn. You know what I mean? They've got something more to say. They need to expand because they've got some expertise. They represent some sort of a complex opinion. None of the rules that we talk about are so set in stone, except of course for the ones where you never physically hurt anybody, but you know, that kind of rule. But the timing and like that, sometimes people need to double time, and there's a reason for it, and we all agree that somebody's an expert, they need to really show something, really have put together some sort of presentation. All these are all taken into account, yeah. So everybody gets their turn and an opportunity to give their opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, Ellen and others are making a special point, and yes, it is a really valid one, that one of the main people that you need to show respect to in this process is the timekeeper, because people sometimes get nasty because they really don't think they've had their 2 minutes. That's a perfect example of why I use an actual timer, because then you can see that you had the same amount of time as the other side had. Very important. But yeah, respecting the timekeeper. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, Ellen is pointing out, it's a very good point, thank you. When I read that, I thought human being timekeeper, who somebody's going to yell at, you didn't give me enough time, or you gave them more time than you gave me. Very good point. But Ellen is saying that it could be even the mechanical one needs to be respected, that you need to take the five-second warning, wind up, and give someone else a turn and not just ignore the ding. Good point. You need to have that's a way of showing respect for others, is respecting the timekeeper, respecting the schedule, respecting everybody's time, that they can't just sit there forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Jacques and others are making a very good point also, that you show respect for others by never raising your voice. Very important. We do not yell at each other. We do not get nasty. We do not raise our voice. Mm-hmm. It doesn't help your cause. So you show respect for others by never raising your voice. Thank you, Shaq. It's a very good point. Never raise your voice. You know, a lot. Wow, I'm getting some examples. Thank you for all of your participation. A lot of you have dealt with some interesting people. You know, Andrea and others, and I'm getting some actual examples of this, and it's pretty bad language. They're saying that you show respect to others and others show respect to you by never using bad language or calling anybody a bad name. And I've got some doozies over here that people are telling me that they've heard people call other people. And let's just say that any kind of name-calling or raising of the voice or cursing, none of that is respectful, and it should not be tolerated. The person should be called on it immediately. That is not appropriate behavior within this group. Mm-hmm. Yeah, make everybody glare at them, because that's what peer pressure does. Mm-hmm. Yep, this is true, too. A lot of people are saying that's not only respecting the timekeeper and never raising your voice, and not calling anybody a nasty name and having everybody take turns and not interrupting. But Robert and others, and thank you for your participation, Robert says that showing respect for others is preventing someone else from disrespecting a group member. You step in. Preventing someone else from disrespecting a group member. Just like I just said, that's inappropriate behavior. You can't do that here. You see? Right away. Prevent someone else from disrespecting a group member. Barbara and others, the topic is how do you show respect for others and how do others show respect for you? And Barbara and others are saying that you show respect by having good table manners. Yeah, she gave an example that I'm not going to read because this is a family show. But, yes, having good table manners. Well, you know, it is a good point. We actually, at Recipe for Peace Now, right, one of the things we do is create a convivial atmosphere. And we use it with the food, with the tool of the food. And people are giving me examples of, thank you for all of your participation, that I must confess, I've never actually seen this happen, but I can just picture it. A lot of people are telling me that they've had people who come to the potluck come and get into the food, and they are disrespectful to the other people and to the, it's bad table. All right, I'll go with bad table manners, like Barbara says, because they do something less than courteous table manner-wise. Like, I've got maybe half a dozen people, and there's one more, who is telling me that they've had participants actually lick the community serving utensil and put it back into the container. Actually put it in their mouth, lick it, and put it back in for other people to serve themselves with after it's been licked. Yeah, that's bad table manners. We'll give it that. And that is disrespectful. Yep, it sure is. Or dropping something on the floor and then throwing it back in to the food or to the clean pile. Yeah. And then I'm getting some examples of personal bad table manners, but that I'm kind of, one person's bad table manners is another person's just lack of training, really. And sometimes, you can't be too picky about table manners, really, like chewing with your mouth full or talking with your mouth full or something. But to actually lick the serving utensil and put it back in or throw it on the floor and then throw it back in, that's disrespectful. A lot of people are saying that no personal attacks and no name calling, Harley and others. And it's a good that we just talked about that, but a lot of people seem to see that, and that is disrespectful and will not be tolerated. Yeah. Sometimes you sometimes people kind of absentmindedly do something that's bad table manners, and if they're about to throw the big utensil back in, I usually go, oh, you know, you kind of yell at them from a distance, not rudely, not raising your voice, but kind of a wait type thing, you see, and then they don't throw it back. Yeah. Mm-hmm. People ask me, what do you do if somebody licks the serving spoon and is about to throw it back? Well, you try to stop them first. And if they insist on doing it, well, to tell you the honest truth, I don't think anybody else wants to eat out of it. Yes, it depends on the group. It depends on what it was, is what it really is, yeah. So, and, you know, it's a good point. It also depends on cultural norms. People, a lot of people are saying that the cultural norms in their culture, they're not so fastidious about this. Don't share the same utensil. You know what I mean? They're not so sanitary about the whole thing. And you know, it's a good point, and nobody's really going to die, and that's the truth. Yeah, and so that's somewhat of a cultural thing too. And if it's, you know, if it's culturally correct, you got to take that into account, right? Yeah. You know, George and others are saying, this is an interesting point, too, that I don't usually, haven't seen in a while, but sometimes, yeah. George says that it shows respect for others and others show respect for you when you don't bring strangers with no purpose and no warning to the group. You don't bring stray people. Yeah, who have no purpose. They don't add anything. They're not part of the process. And you didn't warn anybody that you were going to do such a thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's disrespectful. You can't just bring your roommates, your aunt, I don't know, just bring them for the food or something. It's a part of the process. They have to have a purpose there. Yeah. No bringing of strangers with no purpose and no warning, according to George. Good point. You know, Yamena and others are making a very good point to it. Thank you for all of your participation. She says that this is a very good point. If you make a mistake, you just made a mistake. I mean, you should. It's disrespectful to blame someone else. Oh yeah, I'm getting a lot of agreement with that. If you make a mistake, don't blame someone else. Is what Yamena says. Good point. If you made a mistake, fess up or fix it. You know, it's a mistake. Don't blame somebody else. Go, oh, I forgot. I didn't do it. Oh, my goodness. I didn't understand the instructions. Don't just blame somebody else. It's disrespectful. Right. And Alicia, in the same kind of a vein about making mistakes, says that you need to sincerely work towards a successful outcome. And the word sincerely is in bold, as it should be, because we're here for a purpose, right? We want to get something done. We want to have a successful outcome. We're not just here so that we can give, well, you know the term, I suppose it's an American idiom, the term lip service. It means, and it's a global show, so it's kind of a little idiom, but lip service means that you just say you will, but when it comes down to it, you don't produce, you don't really do it. You've just agreed on a general level, but you're not really going to work for a successful outcome. You agreed because I'm so excited about the cause, but you're really not gonna, yeah, sincerely work towards a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. And Layton says that when you're assigned a task, you need to do it without excuses in order to be respectful and to show respect. Mm-hmm. Respect for yourself and respect for others, too. When you're assigned a task, do it without excuses. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, Dana and others, this is a very good point. It seems like basic, but it's a very good point, that it shows respect to yourself and to others, and others show respect to you, by being punctual to the meetings. get there on time, for heaven's sake. Leave plenty of time to get there, because then we can start. And we don't have to start without you. Be punctual to meetings. And if you're not coming, this is a good point, too, being made, be punctual to meetings. And if you're not coming, call or contact, text, call in advance. Tell somebody you're not coming, for heaven's sake. Because otherwise, out of respect for you, we might hold the meeting for 10 minutes, figuring you're coming. Be punctual to meetings, and if you're not coming, call in advance. Good point, Dana and others. Very nicely done. You know, Mayor Dodd has a real good sentence here, and it leads into, of course, Yes, we are getting around to talking about the recipes this time. But he says that you need to RSVP, which is, of course, respond to an invitation, respond to the fact that you know when the meeting is. You need to respond, the RSVP, and actually bring food and not an excuse. And then eat more than everyone. Mary Todd is wonderful. Thank you very much. Thank you for your participation. Let's see, you need to RSVP and actually bring food and not an excuse. And then eat more than anyone. Wow, yeah, people are going, yeah, I've had that experience. They're supposed to bring something. They say they will. In fact, some people, it depends how serious, you know, it depends on the group, how big they are, and if it's like dinner time, how serious you are about what's being brought. Because some people actually assign you something or to ask what you're bringing, and they kind of depend on a certain thing, like an entree or a dessert or whatever. And then you show up empty-handed. RSVP and actually bring food and not an excuse. And then eat more than anyone. So people come empty-handed after they've been told and they said they would come with something. And then they take 3 servings of everything. Yeah, they eat more than anyone else. Cool. Yes. So, that would be disrespectful. So that leads the perfect segue into let's talk about the recipes for a few minutes, right? Let's discuss them. Now, this time, and I am going to do what I do on every show. And if you want to hear prior shows, they are at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. The last 5 are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. But every show I say the same thing because it's so terribly important. If you're going to have food, and we are, because it is not because we are hungry, really. It is a tool to keep people in the room, having the potluck, having the food, having something there to have a time out that is convivial so we can get to know something about each other outside of the realm of what the issues are between us. You'd be surprised. People find all kinds of common ground. And so we're going to have food for when we need a time out, and then people won't leave. And also in any kind of human communication, there comes a time when you need to have some compromise, right? And the reaction to compromise is always, no, let them compromise. If you let people out in the no condition, it will solidify. So we keep them in the room by having a convivial atmosphere with some food, right? Right. Now, here's the other thing that's so terribly important. You will communicate with your participants, with the people that are intending to come, concerning allergies, food prohibitions, and religious prohibitions about food. You don't want somebody to have a bad time. It's a convivial atmosphere. You don't want to get sick or offended or anything like that. And then you communicate this to everybody, so that you all know not to bring peanuts or whatever it is, right? Right. Yes. And those of you who have been here before, thank you for coming back. And welcome to the new people. And I always say also that whenever people are bringing food, it needs to be labeled. Not just what it is, meatloaf. No, labeled as to what is in it, so that anybody who's about to eat it can make a reasoned decision as to whether or not it contains something that they can't eat. Now, I also think that the host, which is usually us, should have some extra food. Yes, Mir Dad, for the people that come empty-handed and then eat more than anyone else. Let's face it, that's really the reason. I love it. Thank you. And that one of the things that the host should have is a safe dish. Now, what's a safe dish? It's something that most people are not allergic to, and you have taken the survey, right, about your participants, asked about allergies, food restrictions, and religious restrictions. It doesn't violate any of those with any of your people, and it is something that does not have a lot of ingredients, and the ingredients would be known to your participants, so they could make a valid judgment. They've eaten it before. So, our safe recipe this time is going to be chicken and dumplings. I've got two very basic recipes, and you can dress them up as you please, but the chicken and dumplings we're going to do first. Very basic, it is, well, it's kind of a stew. Yeah, it's kind of a stew. I think it's more like a really thick soup, but not really. It's kind of a, it's a really nice dish, rather a stew. It's a chicken and dumpling stew. We'll give it a stew. Okay, here we go. We're going to use 2 big cans of cream of chicken soup, the condensed kind that you would ordinarily put water into. Yes, I know. You can make the equivalent of condensed cream of chicken soup by yourself, homemade. Yours will be better than mine. Those of you who have been here before know that as a time saver, and because I am in the United States and these things are very inexpensive and easy for me to come by, I use some canned goods. You don't want to do that. Make your own. It will be much more wonderful than mine. But it's a creamed, thick creamed condensed soup. Okay. 2 nice cans, like about 11 ounces or something, of condensed cream of chicken soup. 3 cups of chicken stock. You can use water if you like, but chicken stock is so much more tasty. 2 nice big onions that we're going to coarsely chop. 2 cups of chopped celery. 2x as much of carrots that we're going to chop. About 4 cups of carrots. Yeah, lovely. I kind of like a little bit of garlic in here, too. People say that I use a lot of garlic. So you can decide. I'm going to use a couple cloves of garlic that I'm just going to crush and put in just because I like garlic. There you go. And 6 boneless, skinless chicken breasts. We could get them out here rather inexpensively, already prepped like that. But you need to take the skin and the bones out because you're going to shred them once they're cooked. 2 nice big potatoes that we're going to peel and cut into cubes. 1 whole cup of green peas. Yes, I'm going to use the frozen kind because they are readily available to me. And I'm going to thaw them out a little bit first just so they're not so cold when you try to boil them. Mm-hmm. So 1 cup of frozen green peas. You want to use fresh, you will make much better than I do. 1.5 cups of biscuit baking mix. Okay, I know this is a global show. So whatever kind of biscuit baking mix that you've got to make baking powder biscuits, in the United States it's called Bisquick. I know that I don't usually promote a product particularly, but it's the biggest biscuit mix packet that you can get. It's the most popular. But anyway, it's a baking mix that makes biscuits, the little baking powder biscuits. 1/3 cup of buttermilk and 1/3 cup of half and half. You could use 2/3 cup of half and half if you preferred it. Okay. So now we've got all the ingredients, right? Right. In a nice big saucepan, we're going to combine the condensed soup, the chicken stock, the onions, and the celery. And we're going to kind of stir that around just because the condensed soup is kind of gluey, let's face it. Now we're going to add the chicken breasts, the carrots, and the potatoes. We're going to bring the whole thing to a boil. We're going to reduce the heat because we want to simmer it. We're going to cover it. And we're going to simmer it for what? About 45 minutes, maybe a little bit less, until everything is getting to be nice and food-like, right? Nice and soft, and not squishy, just you could piece it with a fork. And we want the chicken to be cooked. So we've got the chicken cooked in there. We're going to take the breasts out of the saucepan, out of the pot, and we're going to shred them. I personally use a fork. You could shred them into little pieces. We're going to return it back into the stock, into the pot, now that it's all shredded up. And now we're going to put in the peas. If you put in your frozen peas before this, they will come apart, yes. And you will get little shells everywhere. It just won't be appealing. So we've got everything in the pot. Now we've thrown in the peas. Now we're going to take our biscuit mix, and we're going to combine it with the buttermilk and the half and half, and we're going to make a dough. And it really makes a very nice dough. I know if you don't want to use the mix, you can use a baking powder biscuit recipe. But really, secretly, the mix is a wonderful thing. So we're going to combine the mix with the milk and the half and half. We've now made a dough because we squished it all around real nice. And we're going to I usually wet my hands just so that the dough doesn't stick. And you make little balls, and we're going to plop them into the stew. Like little, people put it in spoonfuls, really. It doesn't have to be round. I think it looks prettier round, but I've seen it done where you just put kind of a spoonful, a teaspoonful at a time into the stew. Yeah. So the whole thing is all boiled and simmered. We've now dropped the biscuits in, the dumplings, which makes the dumplings, right? We're going to cover the pot on a low heat, and we're going to simmer it for about 20 minutes more. Then we're going to, because we want everything to incorporate, we want the dumplings to become dumplings. Pardon me, we want the vegetables to be nice and tender. Now it's been there for about 20 minutes, covered. At the last minute, well, not the last minute, maybe 10 minutes before you're going to serve it, I like to uncover the pan and give it another 10 minutes on the fire simmering, just so that some of the liquid evaporates. Mm-hmm. And there you have it. It's yummy. It's hot. It's served with bowls on the side, yes. It's a stew, but it has the dumplings in it. So people are asking what you serve under it. Personally speaking, you all know, a lot of you have been here before, I like rice with everything if you'd like to serve something under this. It's got dumplings in it already, so you don't really have to, but I actually usually serve rice. I confess this because I have a giant rice cooker, and it's so easy. And you put it to the side. And then if people would like a little bit of rice with it, they take it. And if not, they just have this as a nice, thick soup and a really nice stew, too. It's got the dumplings right in it. So there you have it. That's our safe recipe. It's safe because most people are not allergic to what is in it. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a good point. People are saying that I make such a fuss about labeling, and now I've used a condensed cream of chicken soup. I actually will leave one of the cans out, just on the top, just an empty can or even a full can, so that people can look at it and see what's in it. Mm-hmm. In case they're allergic to some sort of an additive, it is possible to be allergic to that kind of a thing. And people that are know it, and they look at it real carefully. Yeah. Yeah. So when I use a canned prepared product like that, I must confess that I have one on hand so people can read the can. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So now, that was our safe recipe. Now we're going to go for it's a very basic fish and chips recipe. Fish and French fries, yeah. And it's the adventure recipe because, first of all, quite a few people are allergic to fish or don't eat fish. So that's the first thing. Also, this thing needs a deep fryer. And, you know, a lot of times I say it's interesting as a group activity to, you know, cook together. People tell me it's not really cooking together, but to demo something. This needs a deep fryer, and you have to be careful about the hot fat so that nobody gets splashed. When this is all done, if you want to take it with you and not fry it on the spot, but keep it hot, you can keep it hot in the oven, but you can't keep it for a real long time because breaded batter like this goes soggy. Yeah, and the fries go soggy too. So, yeah, here we go. So we're actually going to make the fish and the chips basically in the same deep fryer, right, one after another, which is, the chips are just potatoes that you deep fry, so it's wonderful. I think it's an excellent recipe because it's easy to do, and you can cook it as you stand there. And it's kind of fun, but you got to think about the deep fryer part because it could be dangerous. Okay, here we go. We've got 2 pounds of potatoes that we're going to make into chips shape, right? Sticks, French fry shape, whatever you want to call it. So you're going to, I guess you don't have to peel them, but I always do, and make them into sticks so that you can make French fries, right? Right. So 2 pounds of potatoes. Enough oil for your deep fryer, whatever on earth it is that you're using, so that you can deep fry something. We're going to use 8 cod fillets that are skinned, and you've gotten all the little bones out. Cod's kind of common around here, but any kind of a firm fish will do. See, I pick cod. Yes, people are asking about the frozen fillets. Yes. You know that I use them. In all truth and honesty, where I am, though, fish is fairly inexpensive and easy to come by fresh. So, yes, I actually do use fresh fish. Are you excited or what? You're shocked. Yeah. People are going, really? Yeah. Then we've got the batter. Now, if you're going to make a double batch of this, which probably you are, because, 8 fillets is not that many, and people maybe want more than one. I personally make the batter in 2 different batches because after a while it gets kind of crummy, and you want it to be nice on the fish. So anyway, here's 1 batch of batter. We're going to use 2/3 of a cup of just plain flour, just that all-purpose flour, 1 egg yolk, not the whites, 2 teaspoons of oil, and 1/4 cup of water. That's it. That's all we're going to do. So we're going to make our fries first, right? We've already cut them into strips, into fry shape. Yeah, just strips. We've got our deep fat fryer going. It's nice and hot. We're going to throw the potatoes in the basket for about 3 minutes. That's all we're going to do. We're just going to throw them in. We're not going to do anything to them. 3 minutes. You lift them out, you shake off the excess, and you throw them on a paper towel because we're going to use them later. We're going to double fry them is what we're going to do. But that made them hot, but they're not crispy yet. So while those are kind of sitting on the paper towel and the deep fat is still going, we're going to make our batter. We're going to sift the flour into a bowl, and, you know, you take your hand and you make like a little indentation in the flour. That's where you throw the egg yolk. You add the oil and a little bit of the water. Then you squish it all around and incorporate everything. And as you're going, you kind of dribble in the water because you don't want to put too much in and make it not batter but kind of liquidy. You know what I mean? And so you want to make a nice smooth batter. I personally use my hand on it. It's not enough batter to use a mixer. If you're going to use a big batch of it, you might use a mixer. But so you get it all incorporated around, makes a nice smooth batter. And now we've got that all done. Let's throw our fries in again for about 5 minutes until they go crisp. Ha! Now they're done. It takes about 5 minutes. I do them in two batches because I think it makes the inside softer and the outside crispier. I just think it's a good tip. So that's what I do. And so they've now fried. We're going to drain them off, and we're going to stick them in the oven to keep them warm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've now got our batter because we put it all together. Mm-hmm. And we let it sit there for a couple of minutes, 5 minutes, while the fries were double frying there, because it kind of makes the dough come together a little bit better, the batter. So we've got our fish. We've patted the fish dry. We've taken out all those nasty little bones, if there were some. We're going to dip the fish into the batter, nice and evenly coated. And then we're going to kind of dangle them to drip off any excess so that they're really nicely coated and you don't have lumps. And we're going to put them in the hot oil. Fry them up, 5 minutes. Depends on how hot your oil is, but I'll assume it's very hot, until they're nice and brown on both sides and they're all puffed up and golden. You do this with all the fillets, of course. You dip them nice and evenly, and you drain off the excess. There you have it. There you've got it. It's done. Yum. It's easy. It looks wonderful. It tastes just yummy. A very basic fish and chips recipe. You gussy it up any way you like. People are asking all kinds of questions about spices and things. Yes. You know, you can even put just a drop of Tabasco sauce in it if you like to have it a little bit spicier. I think I usually go for the basic recipe and then put condiments on the side, because it has been my experience that people do not like spicy. Okay, there's people that don't like spicy at all, and there's people that you can't get spicy enough for. Well, that's why you have the condiments on the side, right? The not spicy at all will ignore them. The never spicy enough will throw Tabasco sauce on everything. So there you have it. But that is a very basic fish and chips recipe. You just make sure that your cod fillets or whatever kind of firm fish you're using, a white fish looks nicer. Although I've seen people do a salmon, but around here that'd be very expensive, and it's kind of too soft a fish. But you pat them dry, get rid of any little bones, you dip them nice and evenly on all sides, and you plop them into the deep fryer. Yummy. So, but it's our adventure recipe because it's fish, and also really because it's deep fried, I suppose. But the fish part is what people have food prohibitions about. So, I see that our time together is nearly up. My goodness, it went fast. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you very much for listening. Please do come again. If you'd like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. The last 5 shows are archived on that website. All of the shows are at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.